Gentlemen, you're both drunk on cosmic wine.
Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Mark Sylvester.
And I'm Dr. Richard Schulman.
This is All Psych.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Alt Psych, starring my friend, companion, colleague, and all-around superhero, Dr. Mark Sylvester. There he is. And so we're going to start our show today, which is going to just knock your socks off about artificial intelligence, part two. It's such a big topic. We had to have another show, but we're going to start with something a little more intelligent and something really important nowadays. You know, our country, our society is being ripped apart by people arguing about medical procedures. And are you a good person if you haven't had a certain medical procedure? So this is about secure friendship. This is our mental wealth tip. So here are the hallmarks of a secure friendship. Number one, you can have space or distance without guilt. Number two, you can give honest feedback, be vulnerable without any judgment. Number three, and here's the big one, you can allow for different perspectives on things, which is in short supply in our culture nowadays, and mutual respect, which I guess goes with the rest of them. So check in with your friends and you'll see how secure that friendship is. So now we leave the world of mental wealth and head towards the world of artificial intelligence. And I turn to my resident expert, Dr. Mark Sylvester.
I mean, I'm just a guy, his name's Larry. But I did do some research on this show. We had a good show. The first part, I think, was really about what we think we know about AI, how we currently define AI, what it is, where is it used, what's it capable of, and when, if ever, meaning now till some point in the future, will it surpass us in many ways? And of course, it already has, like robotics, building cars do a better job at that than the humans. But at some point, you push that far enough out, and we are looking at the Skynets and the, you know, anthropomorphic combat chassis battle bots hell-bent on capturing, enslaving, and or eliminating these human counterparts, you know, Judgment Day type of stuff. So we stayed away from that last time, really. You know, we focused on things like Facebook, because certainly Facebook and Amazon and Apple and Siri and all these are real world, real time evidence of what AI currently looks like. Well, that seems pretty benign until you realize what it's doing through its light speed ability to adapt via these progressive learning algorithms, which we talked about in the first part of this series, which then gives power into a third party. The data itself can become the author of the programming. So you've removed the human element to some degree. That's when I think people like the Elon Musk and the Stephen Hawking's get a little worried and concerned, like, you know, AI's here now. We don't need to wait for Skynet. And in some ways, maybe this is even more damaging than a Skynet end of the world fallout.
I was thinking more about Cylons in Battlestar Galactica, who look perfectly human, act perfectly human, and can sort of just be in the society, but can compute things in lightning speed and do all kinds of things, have superhuman strength. That's the science fiction version of this. Maybe we're not there yet, but it sounds like we're on the road.
I think we're, you know, I don't know how long the road is. I don't know how many side streets are on it, but if you looked at it as a linear road, I think we're halfway down it. We're in enough where we need to be answering, you know, asking and answering and thinking about much more important questions that just are, we either don't know about or we know about, but it might hurt profits to talk about it or change it.
Well, in the end, isn't the question of what is a human being? Or what is a sentient being, maybe?
Yeah.
You know,
and you know, if they start, the inventor of AI, whose name I have lost, but John Wright or something like that, the inventor kind of identified four primary AI types: a reactive AI, which most people can, you know, relate to that, whether that's a touch screen at your supermarket or your fast food or on your iPhone. And then they get a little bit more intelligence, like with limited memory, working memory, being able to retain, regurgitate. Doesn't indicate smarts yet, but you can see as the systems and the layers and the software and the algorithms and the memory and the learning increase, you might develop a theory of mind, which then could go on to sentience. So there is a path, I think, between like teaching a early computer, one of the most basic computations, to being a machine that has sentience on par or analogous to our own.
So if I look for a Gibson guitar, and then I get 47 ads for Gibson guitars, that's actually artificial intelligence.
100%.
Yeah, I think people don't realize it. They're looking at the science fiction brand, you know, robots walking, talking, acting very human, and yet it's already all around us is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it's very immersive, you know, and the intent at this point tends to be how to build a better capitalistic product, how to outcompete competitors, how to make, you know, the machine human interface.
Well, is it right now, would you say right now it's about a business model, that AI is about a business model? So let's say.
Yeah, it's about selling stuff.
But it uses knowledge of human, the way the human brain works, to sell it. So if I have a certain attention span and they want to hit my dopamine level, let's say, they'll throw certain things at me at certain times that, what the hell was that? That will get me excited, perhaps, or interested. And what I'm hearing once again is that that's AI, because there's an algorithm that determines that. It's not some guy in the back room going, I think we can sell this guy a Gibson guitar. It's just they get the information that you look for one. And then there's a certain, I don't know, a certain lag time or a certain way that this happens based on an algorithm.
Well, what's creepy is if you look at all of the humans, like just take, I don't know if we're allowed to say Facebook, but if you just take one platform, although Facebook in particular is really good at constantly developing, I think, you know, the leader of that company is wanting to triple right now the AI algorithms, which is going in the wrong direction, without some oversight as to, are these algorithms, what will happen as these algorithms are employed, or worse, evolve?
Is it that the data comes into this nameless platform, fascist book, let's call it, and do they sell that data to companies that will send the ads based on certain, I mean, how do you know how it works?
I don't. It's all, I think most people are uncomfortable with it, but they certainly can sell data to third party vendors if they think it's in their best interest. Like, hey, you know what? We've got a user 65843282 in Alabama or Alaska who's always looking up chainsaws, trying to buy chainsaws, you know? Boom, you're going to get chainsaw ads out the wazoo. Or you might get chainsaw dealers starting to show up.
So what you're saying then is our data is the product. We are the product.
We are the product.
Okay. And then AI takes over, I guess, at that point.
And basically controls us like puppet strings.
I think that is a lot closer to the truth than anybody knows.
Yeah, and it's, you know, over the last year, it's really haunted me more and more. One of our favorite podcasts we did was on social media, and how the not only the people that started these companies, but the psychologists that have looked at this are seeing the insidious rot of a form of communication that we've all become accustomed to. You know, this is not only foreign, it's a type of a foreign language, but it's a type of a foreign approach to a situation of data mining, of algorithms. They're essentially learning not about you, but what about you makes it more likely that you will purchase a product or engage in an end outcome, which I don't know, maybe that's a philosophical argument. Are you better off that your machine, that some people like that. They don't like to have to search around. You know, I want to buy a pink kayak and I'll be getting that feed in my phone this afternoon. Some people like that, like, huh, yeah, I got a pink kayak ad and I know AI did that and I'm okay with that. And maybe you should be, I don't know. You should at least be thinking about it. But if it's a different situation and you're talking about when machine computing or progressive, you know, what the inventor called computational intelligence or machine learning, when that gets higher order thinking to resemble something like a positronic net, a theory of the mind, sentience, we got a different set of problems, concerns, questions, capabilities. Possibly it would be a little bit too late at that point, depending on how self-sufficient these things work. But let's be honest, Teslas can drive autonomously. If the entire fleet decided it wanted to mobilize, they could probably take pretty good care of themselves.
Yeah, but it does bring the question of how do we protect ourselves? And I heard someone talking about it on a podcast the other day where he said, you know, we found that lead in paint and maybe lead in gasoline wasn't healthy for us. So we made rules after we found it out.
Mm-hmm.
Once this stuff is out, you're not going to be able to make a rule to say, well, we can't have certain kinds of AI because it'll already be embedded in our system. This has to be looked at before it reaches that level.
Yeah. And we covered a lot of that, I think, in the last show. So I thought this show, it'd be funny to talk about the extrapolation.
Where are we going?
Well, let's play the tape forward and discuss the risks of artificial intelligence above and beyond what we've already mentioned. But just for society and in the I don't know if the hegemony of it all is what I'm looking for, but if like going back to Elon Musk and robots and doing repetitive, dangerous, heavy tasks, one risk is you're going to lose jobs, right? If you have robots that are doing the job of three humans, doing it better, faster, cheaper, they're gone, right?
Right.
There's a lot of people don't think about this. There's a lot more privacy violations that can potentially occur using artificial intelligence, which that gets a little bit scarier. It's kind of along with the deep fakes that some of these AIs can make really realistic looking deep fakes. You know, one of the first things you learn in computing in school is garbage in, garbage out. So if their algorithmic bias is caused by bad data, then they're going to have a bad algorithm, which may have a bad outcome. So there's no force, there's no overseer, there's no police. This thing is sentient, it's alive, it's everywhere and nowhere like the Matrix, and it's constantly evolving through the collective intellect of all of its users' brains. Sounds a lot like the virus these days, if you think about it.
Yeah, and another, you know, a question formed in my head, and I don't know that there's an answer, but what, perhaps philosophically, if human beings in the end are creating these artificial intelligences, like in that Star Trek where it was his engrams that were put on the computer, don't we put our own conflicts into our own emotional conflicts into the value systems of that artificial intelligence? I mean, is morality in there?
You know, there are morality subroutines in the future written into certain machines. You know, Data had emotional subroutines, really a chip, but within that chip was emotional subroutines. These were things that, despite the epigenetic phenomenon or however you want to look at it, they never became sentient. So you could be sentient but not have emotions, right? You could be sentient and lack other critical human-like abilities, like compassion or
that's where I was going, yeah.
Yeah, or generosity or altruism. It's very hard for a machine, unless it was programmed to randomly exert random acts of altruism, that's not how humans behave. It emulates it, and you can keep emulating it, and you can keep getting closer and closer and closer. But at the end of the day, either humans are not going to be able to be replaced, or they're going to be necessary for the transition from human to a hybrid, alien-human hybrid, or human-machine hybrid. But there's a lot more that goes on as well, like socioeconomic inequality, for one. If you have AI doing a lot of this, it really disrupts the way that we interact with each other economically, but also socially. Look at how connected everybody is, but how many of these people, how many of your Facebook friends are going to come to your funeral?
They're not all coming?
Maybe if you do a Facebook funeral and you stream it live. We know it's
I have to get somebody else to do that for me.
We know its ability to upset the market and cause market volatility. I don't even know where to start. That's enormous. You know, Tesla will have a car crash and, you know, their stock goes down because it's all as proof that the AI is not working. Then you get a little scarier. We're getting a little closer to Skynet with weapons automation. Now, we've been doing that for a while, right? Really since the 90s, they've been very proud of these smart bombs and very, very high-tech weapons design, delivery, deployment, targeting, trajectory, functioning. There's a lot of programming that goes on in that. There's very little human input. So it would be nice to have some commission to decide for, I don't know, the world, what's over the line and what's not. And that's a monumental task, but my concern is without it, we're all just kind of doing our plunging into the AI future and suffering the consequences until we get this thing under wraps, until we can understand what this genie can do.
Well, I guess, you know, power is power. Plutonium, you can build an atom bomb, or you can build a nuclear power plant. You know, it's the same plutonium. It just seems to me, what's the risk-benefit ratio here? Sounds pretty risky to me. I don't know.
But then ask someone if they would want to give it up.
Well, Give up what? Self-driving cars? Give up Facebook?
Yep. Give up anything that's AI.
Well, I mean, what if, okay, so let's, as opposed to giving it up, what about managing it better? Let's imagine a Facebook where they don't make their money on by selling our data, that we buy a subscription and they're not allowed to sell our data. Then we could still, you know, see what you had for breakfast and your kid's softball game. But we wouldn't have to deal with all the algorithms. I mean, there may be ways around it.
It might be too late.
It might be, but you know, we go back to the idea that if you're getting something for free, then you're the product.
You know what I'm concerned about?
I can't, what does it say?
It's a pink kayak.
Oh my God. Can I have one too?
Oh, it'll send me two now that you said that.
Okay.
So, you know, to your point, we need the thought leaders, the power companies, the Netflixes, the Amazons and YouTubes and all that, Googles. We need them to either regulate themselves, which hasn't gone well, regulate each other, or more importantly, have government regulation or some third party oversight that's not the company itself. Because otherwise, with today's technology, they could be building something so advanced and dangerous that society and even our defense minds don't see as a true threat before it's too late.
Well, you know, there's a lot of money to be made, brother. Isn't that the bottom line?
What about the future? At the way that we're going with the computationalism and functionalism, you know, eventually machines will have some level of arguable consciousness.
My Gibson guitar just showed up.
Or sentience. And then now you're talking about, okay, well, if you know, sentience is the ability to feel. I mean, how do you describe that? But
is it? I mean, maybe we should. I never really looked up the word. I thought it was about awareness, being self-aware, which maybe.
Yeah, most people think it's, let me see if I looked up an actual definition. Most of the time, it is the ability to feel or be aware, it refers to the depth of awareness of an individual processes about himself or herself and others.
Capacity to experience feelings and sensations.
It's a minimalistic way of defining consciousness.
It's interesting. Feeling or sensation is distinguished from perception and thought. So.
Which is pretty interesting. And then you get into super intelligence. That's where most people start to conceptualize this is not good. Because you could reach that, you know, you get a super intelligence, it by far can blow any human processors out of the water. There will eventually be, it doesn't matter how we regulate, no matter what, at some point these two lines will cross and a technological singularity event will occur, possibly leading to transhumanism like our thumbnail in this on this podcast, where we all get downloaded into machines and the mortal coils of our body are sloughed off like a little cocoon.
Yeah, but isn't that essentially what the battle is about? You know, depending on what you believe, you know, and since I don't believe in death, I believe, you know, the spirit is eternal. if I'm uploaded into a mainframe somewhere, my consciousness, then I'm not evolving beyond that. That's it, as far as I'm concerned. In fact, I don't know if you've ever read Neal Stephenson, a great science fiction writer. He wrote about a scenario, he called it Dodge in Hell. And it's about a guy who's a billionaire, and he goes for a routine medical exam and he dies. But he had signed papers to preserve his body. And they upload his consciousness into a mainframe, and the mainframe starts doing weird things because he's in there. Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff, because worlds get created in there, and based, he doesn't really know what's going on at first. The bottom line is, to me, our evolution comes from spirit. But it seems to me that people who want, what did you call it, transhumanism, right? That they want to hold on to this body, this power, this material power, success, call it whatever you want. And so it's sort of a war between materialism and spirituality. I don't know, maybe I'm taking this too far, but that's where I go with it.
No, I mean, I think that's right where we are now. And people need to be aware of it. I don't know what they can do about it, per se. I think it's important to pay attention to when AI is starting to exert more of a dominant effect or role in your life. And then for everyone else, it's going to be their level of comfort with that, right? So some people might just love that, you know, hey, Alexa, bring me groceries from so-and-so. And I don't know. I don't know how to do that stuff, but.
You just did it, man.
Yeah. I mean, there was a great movie with Arnold called The Sixth Day, and got to be 20 years old now, but they did a really accurate job at predicting technology and kind of where we are now and what it would be capable of. And, you know, he's got a refrigerator where, and I think these already exist, where, you know, milk always goes in the same place. Well, it's being weighed every time. So when it gets down to a quarter or whatever set point, it will automatically order milk.
Yeah, but does it tell you can't have that ice cream because you weigh too much?
It will. I'm sure there's an option for that. But those are the kind of, you know, things. Some people want nothing to do with it.
No. The problem isn't, I'm sure there's an option for it. What if you don't get an option? That's just the way it is. You're not allowed to have that ice cream if you weigh a certain amount or you have a certain blood sugar level. You know, we're coming down to the idea of, do we have a choice even to act foolishly? You know what? I'm just going to take this really the long way around. I have a really dear friend who is an astrologer. So you say, well, you know, if you have these charts, do you actually have free will? And the answer is, of course you have free will, but so few people actually use it. You know, and I think that if AI becomes even more integrated into our culture than it is, people will forget about free will. I mean, you take this podcast, for example. Do we go into Zoom and really create all those? The settings are preset. You just click it on and say, hi, how you doing? In fact, so many things, they call it user friendly.
Yeah.
I don't call them smartphones. They're dumb phones. I used to know everybody's phone number. I don't know your phone number is Mark Sylvester. I don't know your phone number.
Right. You know, and it's a good question, because some people may be like the, who are the pre-Mormons, the Amish, where they're going to reject not only computers, AI, but technology in a more rudimentary form, like cars and electricity and stuff like that. you know, it'd be interesting to hear a little bit from them as to what the religious underpinnings are, because there may be some messages that coincidentally are helping making them immune to all of the damage, the negative side of AI in our social media, as it's directed interpersonal relationships, as it's helped to form information dissemination and help people coordinate certain events, attacks, assemblies, whatever, given the power of the media into anyone with a cell phone who can make a story anywhere in the world. It seems to me like the Amish got it right here. They know something that coincidentally they're not entangled with. They don't have these AI problems. Must be very confusing and foreign to them to see how society has changed around them, because they would have a very unique perspective. Like, you know, we're all walking around through, you know, crosswalks, staring at this thing, staring at this thing. And they must be looking at us like we already are AI. This, you know, well, Elon Musk himself said this is already an extension of yourself. Data transfer is the rate limiting step.
Yeah, but it, you know, it all depends how far we, as always, how far we go down the rabbit hole.
I'll go down.
Let's go way down the rabbit hole. So if you are parroting algorithms, whether it's coming from this chocolate bar shaped thing or not, if you're parroting without critical thinking, without discussion, without debate, how's that any different from what this thing is? I mean, is a huge portion of the population zombies already? That they, you know, no critical thinking, no critical thought allowed. Is that the end result? I mean, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Because AI doesn't really talk about critical thinking. They work on an algorithm that's predetermined and may have nothing to do with those current circumstances. Which is why Captain Kirk was so necessary on the Enterprise.
Why do you think, where do you think that this is leading, and when should we be concerned, if not yesterday?
Oh, absolutely yesterday. Absolutely yesterday. We have allowed way too much encroachment on our public lives. Okay, give you an example. Fact checking. The fact checkers are paid by somebody to check certain facts. Okay. Those people paying for the fact checking determine what the facts are. So I've seen cases where people were just putting up quotes of what somebody said. Fact checkers have determined that this has been taken out of context or this is not true. We didn't care about fact checking till about 2 years ago. Posts were not censored until the pandemic started. Now, those posts are censored with algorithms, not by people, because one of my posts was censored and I got put in Facebook jail. And I protest and they said, well, we have too many complaints for human beings to process this. Sorry. That's what we're up against right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, the time was yesterday, but we better be thinking about it right now, because we have learned to become dependent on this stuff. I actually enjoyed when I wasn't on Facebook. I enjoyed it a lot.
Everybody says that.
Excuse me?
Everybody says that, like, oh,
yeah, but then everybody comes back to it. Maybe they didn't enjoy it that much. But, you know, I do like the idea that I can talk to somebody in England easily using this thing. I like the idea that I can take a picture of something cool and send it to you and say, hey, this is cool. I like word processing. So to me, it's going to boil, you know, this stuff is here. It ain't going away. I like the idea that I can see patients on telemedicine who can't, for whatever reason, can't get into the office. I like that idea. The question is, are we going to be ruled by it, or is it, or are we going to use it in a humane, human fashion? I'm wondering if we even have to get to the science fiction version of this, where the Cylons figure out that they're smarter and better and maybe even more moral than we are, and they want to destroy us because we're the infection on the planet or something like that.
Yeah, that's Judgment Day stuff.
Yeah. And is it possible? Sure it is. But it all depends on what's the morality or lack thereof, or the programming, the values that are put into those algorithms. Okay, so in 2001, there was a value for the computer to be perfect. The computer was not allowed to lie. Then they told the computer that it wasn't allowed to tell the astronauts the true nature of the program. So the computer went crazy under the conflict. In that regard, the artificial intelligence, as he says, all mistakes in the HAL 9000 series have been caused by human error. Well, who the hell do you think programs this stuff? The question is, will it reach a point where it can think maybe independently is better than being, than sentience?
Yeah.
Where it will think independently and there's no off switch.
I mean, there always needs to be a kill switch, I think, you know.
You don't think that if this thing is smart enough, it could figure out how to remove the kill switch?
Probably.
That's in most of the science fiction stories about artificial intelligence. It has removed the kill switch.
Well,
anyway, that's kind of where we're going on our little journey.
You could do multiple fail safes and stuff like that.
Well, but the idea here is, if you're programming something to work a gazillion times faster than a human brain, and to have all the information in the universe or information in our universe, it might be able to figure out a whole bunch of kill switches and a bunch of fail safes. And, you know, obviously we're heading into a science fiction future, but think about how many things science fiction has predicted that have turned out to be true, or that we've surpassed the science fiction. You know, our reality, and I keep going back to this, this phone is far more powerful. Hey, there it lights right up. Than the computer on Apollo 11 that landed on the moon. This is much more powerful than that. And you know, we have it to do all kinds of ordinary things. We are lazy. I guess that's the bottom line. And this is convenient.
So is AI making us lazier and lazier?
It's making our laziness less costly to us in the short run anyway.
I like that.
You know, if I don't go and get groceries, then I'm going to be hungry. But I can say, hey, Alexa, how about some groceries? And it shows up at my door. I don't actually have to go get them. I just have to say it.
Yeah, that's, I think most people would agree that's a convenience. But I don't know, it seems like a fair number of people get concerned with where their data is being used or breached. And for Absolutely. What purpose and why, you know? Absolutely. Is it being used because they want to catalog all humans' DNAs, or, you know, have that avatar of every single thing that every machine with every updated piece of software and equipment could dig up on that person to assemble as close of a digital avatar to the real organic equivalent.
Well, the question, you know, the question is what could possibly go wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, and because all, okay, take a simple thing like sending a text to somebody. You write a really deep, heartfelt text and they don't interpret it correctly. And all of a sudden it blows up. Yeah. Why? Because we can't tell in general the emotion that comes in these communications. And I dare say that that's the real issue. Although I have heard they're developing emotion chips for that it will, AE will be the real challenge, not AI, you know, artificial emotion. But, you know, I have plenty of people I could identify human beings with some artificial emotion too, I guess. You know, the secret to success in Hollywood. Well, it's sincerity. Once you can fake that, everything else is pretty easy. The question is boiling down to what does it mean to be human versus what does it mean perhaps to be artificial? You know, in many science fiction stories, the machine actually winds up with greater tenderness than the human. Take the Wizard of Oz. Hearts will never be practical until they are made unbreakable when the Tin Man gets his heart. You know, we've been wrestling with this for a long time. You know, the Scarecrow gets a degree and all of a sudden now he's smart.
Going back to the point I made on a previous show, their rate of evolution is infinitely faster than our rate of evolution, which if you just took that piece by itself, is probably the scariest thing.
But tell me something, in your opinion and in your research, and I find if you don't have an answer, by the way, isn't their rate of evolution dependent on humans making that evolution happen?
Well, it depends somewhat on human intervention. They had to invent the stuff. They have to, you know, they haven't really had to do much culling or regulating or anything, but they're definitely going ahead to triple and expand and make this more energy, you know, information dense. So to me, it's a logical progression that the humans will not be able to stay ahead of because the machine algorithms can learn, you know, at a geometric rate, blow by us, make decisions before we even trips a fail safe that we may or may not have put in there.
But aren't the decisions based on what we put in there initially?
To a point, yeah. Like you can put in morality subroutines and, you know, exceptions to that. But at the end of the day, when the machine starts teaching itself, it's sort of like a child learning how to interact with the world with itself as a teacher. Yeah, it was born with it, with its genetic biology, in this case, hardware and some operating system. But everything it learned about the world, unless ongoing updates from humans, like, hey, don't do this. This is bad. We changed our mind about this, that. I think it can get really sticky. I think it can get malfunctions. And eventually you're going to hit that cross point where at least the AI is going to see us not so much as a target for products and selling crap, which they don't even realize what they're doing. I don't think the sentience is going to be close for probably 50 years. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's 500 years. Maybe it's 5 years. It's hard to tell with electronics and this type of new world. But at the end of the day, humans are going to have to come to some sort of a conciliation with our mechanical overlords.
Okay.
A lot of people want to implant stuff, right? They want to implant their, Elon's working on his Neuralink. A lot of people want to implant their credit cards and, you know, little fobs and crap in their skin. These are people that are, you know, humans pushing for that. Then you have other people that would absolutely never do that for their entire life. I'm trying to think of, like, Mormons aren't big fan of technology. I've picked on them a little bit only because I admire their will to resist what they could potentially have seen as problematic and all of the distractions and even AI interfering with what God's work, you know, a good God-fearing family, a good system that's worked for generations and generations and allowed them to be quite happy without the drama of all the other crap we pick up on the internet. So what does it all mean, Basil?
It means we're just about out of time for today.
Oh, perfect. Yes.
A good segue. So we ask everyone to be mindful, I guess, be aware of how much this is in your life and what do you really want? I guess in the end, that's sort of the bottom line. How much freedom do you want? How much freedom to think? You know, some people don't want it. I think it's nuts, but what can I tell you? So on that happy note, we'll see everybody next time. And until then,
be well.
Close.
Namaste.
And that too.
Fucker out.